Patience here.
Oh, boy, got some blood going.
Yeah, blood.
He's wearing it, too.
Welcome to the bed. When you get over to the bed, we'll go ahead and give you the story. This is all going to happen super fast. Welcome to the emergency room.
70-year-old female, single driver of a vehicle. Appears that she went off-road into a ditch, rolled over her car onto a trailer, caved in. The top of the vehicle was caved in, and she was hanging out partially from the window.
She's giving her left hand. 45 minutes of CPR. No, we can stop CPR. Six over.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're digging into something really key, a clinical comparison that honestly, trips up a lot of people, even experienced nurses.
It really does.
We're talking about the fundamental differences between peripheral artery disease, that's PAD, and peripheral venous disease, or PVD. Life-saving differences, really.
Absolutely. So if you're maybe prepping for boards or you're a nurse just trying to sharpen that clinical judgment at the bedside, think of this as your high-yield guide.
Yeah, exactly.
We're hitting that 80-20 rule hard today. Focusing on the key 20% of the differences that will give you, 80% of the right answers in assessment and management.
And our goal isn't just like listing symptoms side by side. We really want to give you a clinical roadmap, something that connects the pathophysiology straight through to what you see the assessment findings, and then crucially, what you do, the nursing priorities.
Let's start right there with the big picture, the core concept. Because understanding where the problem is fundamentally dictates everything else you do.
Makes sense.
So peripheral artery disease, PAD. This is all about the arteries, right? Their walls get thick, they narrow progressively, it mostly hits the lower extremities, and it's a big deal systemically.
And systemic is the word. It's not just a leg problem. It's a huge public health issue. It's a signal for widespread cardiovascular disease, CVD.
Definitely.
The numbers are pretty staggering, like 8.5 million people over 40 in the U.S. alone have PAD.
Wow.
Yeah. Symptoms usually pop up between 50 and 70, but if someone has diabetes, much earlier.
Right. Diabetes accelerates everything.
And data also shows it hits Black populations harder, which is important to note.
It is. And you have to remember, getting that PAD diagnosis means a huge increase in risk for other major problems, heart attacks, strokes, overall mortality.
Because it's the same underlying process, isn't it? Atherosclerosis, it's happening everywhere.
Exactly. It's not just the leg arteries. It's systemic. Now, flip that coin.
PVD.
Peripheral venous disease. This is kind of an umbrella term.
Right. Not one single thing.
Not really. It covers things like venous thromboembolism, VTE, which includes DVT, deep vein thrombosis, and also chronic venous insufficiency, CDI.
Okay.
And the problem here is completely different. It's not about getting blood out to the tissues. PVD is about problems getting blood back to the heart. Dysfunctional venous return.
Okay. So that's the core contrast right there.
That's your first big takeaway. Your clinical pearl. PAD. Problem getting arterial blood down to the tissues. Think ischemia. PVD. Problem getting venous blood back up to the heart. Think congestion, clotting.
PAD. Down. PVD up. Got it. Okay, let's dive deeper then into the engine room, the pathophysiology. What's actually going wrong in the vessels?
For PAD, you said arteries, atherosclerosis.
Yep. Think of your arteries like high-pressure pipes. Atherosclerosis is like rust and gunk building up inside. It usually starts with some kind of damage to the inner lining, the endothelium.
Like from high blood pressure, bad cholesterol. Yep. Exactly. Turbulent flow. Chronic inflammation from high cholesterol, hypertension, smoking. Those things injure the lining. Then fats, lipids start to build up. A fibrous cap forms over it. That's the plaque.
And that plaque just grows.
It grows, it hardens, sometimes it calcifies. The artery gets narrower and narrower, less room for blood to flow through. That's the blockage problem. Reduces flow downstream.
Which explains why all those standard CVD risk factors are the main drivers. Smoking, being overweight, high cholesterol, high blood pressure.
And diabetes. So especially diabetes.
Why is diabetes such a big player here?
Well, a couple of reasons. It speeds up the whole atherosclerosis process everywhere, but it also tends to affect the smaller arteries further down, like in the feet and toes, making PAD often more severe and harder to treat in diabetics.
And smoking.
Oh, smoking is just catastrophic for arteries. It directly damages the endothelium, makes platelets stickier, increases inflammation, messes with lipid levels. Huh. It just hits PAD from every angle. Vicious cycle.
Okay, so PAD is blocked delivery pipes. What about PVD? If arteries are delivery, veins are the return system, right? Lower pressure.
Right. Different structure, different problems. For VTE, the clot formation in the veins, we often talk about the Virchow triad. It's a classic concept, but really useful.
Virchow's triad. Okay, break that down for us.
It's basically three factors that permit clot formation. If you have one or more, your risk goes way up. Usually we're talking DVTs in the big veins, like the iliac or femoral in the leg.
What's the first leg of the triad?
That's venous stasis. Slow, sluggish blood flow. Remember, veins don't have the heart pumping directly into them like arteries. They rely on muscles squeezing them, like the calf pump, and one-way valves to get blood back up against gravity.
So if that system fails?
Blood pools, stasis. Think about who's at risk. Mm-hmm. Someone who's obese, maybe someone with chronic heart failure or AFib where the main pump isn't deficient, or anyone immobile for long periods.
Like long flights, bed rest after surgery.
Exactly. Or even just sitting for hours without moving. The muscles aren't pumping, blood just sits there. Perfect setup for a clot.
Okay, stasis is one. What's number two?
Endothelial damage. Damage to the inner lining of the vein itself. Just like in arteries, injury triggers the clotting cascade. Platelets rush in.
How does the vein lining get damaged?
It can be direct trauma surgery near the vein. A broken bone, burns, even just inserting an IV catheter can irritate the lining. Or it could be indirect from systemic inflammation like in sepsis or from chemotherapy or even diabetes again.
Diabetes hits both sides, huh?
It really does. It causes widespread vascular inflammation. Okay, so we have slow flow, stasis, and vein wall injury. Endothelial damage. What's the third piece?
The blood itself.
Exactly. Hypercoagulability. The blood is just stickier, more prone to clotting than it should be.
What makes blood hypercoagulable?
Certain underlying conditions. Some cancers produce proclotting factors. Things like polycythemia, where you have too many red blood cells. Sepsis can trigger it. Even high levels of an amino acid called homocysteine.
Anything else nurses really need to watch for?
Yes. This is super high yield. Think about combined risks, a classic one. Women over 35 who smoke and are on estrogen-based birth control or hormone replacement therapy.
Why that combination?
Estrogen can increase certain clotting factors in the blood. Smoking, as we said, damages vessels and also increases things like fibrinogen, another clotting component. Put them together, especially over age 35, you're significantly increasing that hypercoagulability risk.
That's a definite red flag during history taking.
Absolutely critical. Now, before we jump fully into comparing PAD and PDD signs, can I just briefly touch on something related? Raynaud's phenomenon.
Oh, yeah, Raynaud's. It sounds vascular. How does it fit in or differ? Is it need to know or nice to know?
I'd put it under nice to know for the PA-PVD distinction, but definitely need to know for general vascular nursing. It's different because it's not a fixed blockage like PAD.
So what is it then?
Raynaud's is an episodic thing. It's a vasospastic disorder. The small arteries, usually in the fingers and toes, go into intense spasm, clamping down hard. It's temporary, often triggered by cold or stress.
So the artery structure is okay, it just overreacts.
Exactly. It's a functional problem, not a structural blockage. It causes the fingers or toes to turn white, then blue, then bright red as blood flow returns. Can be quite painful. Much more common in younger women, often starts between 15 and 40.
So the nursing approach is different too, not about fixing plaques.
Totally different. It's all about patient education. Teaching them to avoid the triggers. Number one is cold exposure. Wear gloves, even indoors sometimes. Avoid smoking, caffeine, stress if possible, and certain drugs that cause vasoconstriction.
And if they have an attack?
Simple things often work. Run warm water over the hands, swing their arms around. It's about reversing the spasm, not bypassing a blockage. So it involves arteries, yes, but the mechanism spasm versus plaque is totally distinct from PED.
Okay, this is the core of it, right? Bedside assessment. You've got two patients, different leg problems. One's got blocked arteries, the other congested veins. How do they look different? Let's start with pain. Huge differentiator.
Massive. For PAD, the classic pain is intermittent claudication. You need to know this term inside out.
Define it precisely. What makes it claudication?
Okay, it's ischemic muscle pain, usually calf, sometimes thigh or buttock. It comes on consistently with a certain amount of exercise or activity.
Like always after walking two blocks.
Exactly. Predictable. What's happening is the exercising muscle needs more oxygen. The narrowed artery can't deliver enough. The muscle switches to anaerobic metabolism, produces lactic acid. Ouch.
Okay.
But here's the absolute key. The pain resolves quickly with rest. Usually within 10 minutes, often much less. Stop walking. The demand drops. The pain goes away, it's reproducible, and resolves with rest.
That predictability is crucial. But PAD gets worse, right? What happens then?
As the blockage worsens, you can progress to pain at rest. This is a really bad sign. It means there isn't enough blood flow even when the muscle isn't working. Usually felt in the feet or toes, the most distal parts.
And there's a specific pattern to that rest pain.
Yes, high yield pearl here. Rest pain is typically worse when the leg is elevated.
Why?
Because elevation takes away even the little help gravity was providing to get blood down there. It often happens at night when the patient's lying flat, maybe cardiac output dips a bit. They wake up with burning, aching feet.
And they find a way to make it better.
Almost always. They learn instinctively. They'll tell you, I have to sit up and hang my leg over the side of the bed. Or if they sleep in a recliner. That dangling uses gravity to pull a little more blood down and relieve the pain.
Using gravity confirms it's an arterial supply problem. Okay, flip it. What about PVD pain? Totally different.
Totally different feel and pattern. With CVI, chronic venous insufficiency or venous ulcers, the pain isn't usually sharp or exercise-induced like claudication. It's more often a dull, heavy, aching feeling of fullness.
And position matters here, too.
Critically, PVD pain is typically worse with dependency standing or sitting with the legs down for a long time. That increases the venous congestion, the pooling.
And relieved by.
Relieved by elevation. Putting the legs up helps drain that congested blood back towards the heart. So the pain tells you the direction of the problem. PAD pain relieved dangling down. PDD pain relieved elevating up.
Down for arterial, up for venous. Okay, let's move to what we see and feel. Pulses, skin, temperature.
For PAD, think lack of delivery. You have to check pulses below the level of suspected blockage. Pedal pulses, dorsalis pedis, posterior tibial, maybe popliteal, even femoral. In PAD, these are going to be diminished or absent.
What if you can't feel them?
First step, don't panic. Reposition. Try again. Still nothing. Grab the Doppler. That's essential. You're listening for the arterial signal. We usually grade pulses. Zero is absent even with Doppler. One plus is weak thready. Two plus is normal. Three plus is bounding. Finding a zero or one plus in a leg with PAD symptoms is significant.
And the skin. What does chronic lack of blood flow do to the skin?
Classic ischemic changes. The skin looks thin, almost fragile, shiny, and taut. Hair loss on the lower legs is very common. The follicles die off from lack of nutrients. Toenails get thick and brittle.
And temperature.
The whole limb feels cool, maybe even cold compared to the other leg or the rest of the body. Just not enough warm blood getting down there. But the color changes are really dramatic.
Tell us about those.
Two key signs. First, elevation pallor. Lift the patient's leg up above heart level for maybe a minute. Watch the foot. It'll often turn pale, almost ghostly white. Gravity's working against the already poor flow.
Okay, pale went up. What happens when you put it down?
Then you often see a dependent rubor. Put the leg back down, let it hang. The foot turns this deep, dusky, reddish-blue color. It's called reactive hyperemia. The small vessels are dilated wide open, trying desperately to get blood flow, but it's still not enough oxygenated blood. That gives it that rubor color.
Pale up, red down. Very distinct. Now, PVD assessment. Pulses.
Generally, present and normal. The arteries are usually working fine in PVD. The problem is the return trip. Often warm, sometimes even hot, especially if there's an acute DVT causing inflammation. The leg might feel warmer than the other side.
And skin changes. You said brown and leathery for CVI.
Right. Chronic congestion leads to brownish discoloration, especially around the ankles and lower calf. The skin gets thick, tough, leathery.
Yeah.
And there's usually significant edema.
Explain that brown color again. Hemosiderin staining.
Exactly. Because the pressure inside the congested veins and capillaries is so high, red blood cells actually leak out into the surrounding tissue. When those red cells break down, the iron pigment, hemosiderin, gets left behind. It stains the tissue, that brown color. It's permanent.
And if it's an acute DVT, not chronic CVI.
Then the site might be red, definitely swollen, tender to touch, and warm. The patient might even have a low-grade fever, like just over 100.4 Fahrenheit or 38 Celsius.
Okay. Edema and sensation next. We often think swelling with leg problems.
But edema is not a typical sign of PE itself. If a PE patient has edema, you need to look for another cause. Heart failure, kidney problems, something systemic.
But they might have sensation changes.
Oh, definitely. Paresthesia, numbness, tingling, pins and needles is common. That's nerve tissue complaining about ischemia, lack of oxygen. Over time, this can get really bad, leading to loss of protective sensation. They might not feel pressure or pain properly.
Which is dangerous.
Hugely dangerous. They could get a cut, a blister, step on something sharp and not even realize it. That's why foot care is life or death for PD patients.
Okay. Contrast that with PVD edema and sensation.
PVD is where you do expect edema.
Yeah.
Unilateral edema swelling in just one leg is a hallmark sign of a DVT, distal to the clot. In CVI, the edema is chronic, often bilateral, but maybe worse on one side, and it can be really significant, leading to that hard, thickened skin called lipodermatosclerosis over time. Sensation is usually intact, though.
Got it. Lastly, the ulcers. Critical exam topic. How do we tell an arterial ulcer from a venous one just by looking?
Location, 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 and appearance. Arterial ulcers from PA are caused by ischemia. They tend to show up on the toes, the heels, over bony prominences, maybe the lateral ankle places furthest from the blood supply or subject to pressure.
Tom, what do they look like?
They often look punched out, small, deep, with very distinct, sharp edges. The base is often pale or necrotic black with minimal drainage. They are incredibly painful, especially with elevation, and they won't heal without restoring blood flow. These are linked to critical limb ischemia, CLI.
Okay, punched out, painful distal location. Venous ulcers.
Venous ulcers from CVI are usually found in the lower leg, typically above the medial malleolus, the inner ankle area. That's often called the gaiter area.
And their appearance.
Very different. They tend to be more superficial, but can be quite large with irregular borders. The base is often ruddy or yellow with slough, and they produce a lot of exudate, a lot of drainage. They're typically surrounded by that brown, leathery, edematous skin. Painful, yes, especially when the leg is down, but they can heal with the right management, mainly compression. Hashtag tag KBA fee. Diagnostics and complications.
Okay, let's talk testing and trouble. How do we confirm our suspicions? For PAD, the key screening test is the ABI, right? Ankle brachial index.
Yes, the ABI is fundamental. Simple concept. You take the systolic blood pressure at the ankle, both posterior tibial and or soleus pedis arteries. Use the higher reading for each leg. Then you measure the systolic pressure in both brachial arteries in the arms. Use the higher of the two arm readings.
And the calculation.
You divide the highest ankle pressure for that specific leg by the highest brachial pressure. So ankle SBP divided by brachial SBP.
What's normal?
Normal is around 1.00 to 1.30. An ABI of less than 0.90 confirms PAD. Less than 0.70 suggests moderate disease. And if it's less than 0.40, that's severe PAD, usually indicating critical limb ischemia.
But you mentioned a potential trap with ABIs.
Yes, a really important one, especially in older adults and people with longstanding diabetes. Their arteries can become very calcified, very stiff.
Like pipes that won't squeeze.
Exactly. So when you inflate the blood pressure cuff, you can't compress the artery properly. This gives you a falsely high pressure reading at the ankle. You might get an ABI of 1.30 or even higher.
Which looks normal or even high, but they could still have severe PA.
Precisely. It masks the disease. So if the ABI seems oddly high in a high-risk patient with classic symptoms, you can't rely on it alone. Mm. You need to look at the whole picture, their history, your pulse exam, maybe use Doppler waveforms or toe pressures instead.
Good caveat. What about confirming a VTE, like a DVT?
The main diagnostic tool is venous duplex ultrasound. It lets us visualize the vein, see if there's a clot, and check if the vein compresses properly when pressure is applied. A vein with a clot won't compress.
And labs. D-dimer comes up a lot.
Right, D-dimer. It measures fragments of broken down blood clots. It's very sensitive, meaning if the D-dimer is negative in a patient you think has low risk for VTE, it's very good at ruling it out. You can often stop there.
Yeah, but it's positive.
It's not very specific. Lots of things besides a VTE can raise D-dimer. Recent surgery, infection, inflammation, pregnancy, cancer. So a positive D-dimer doesn't confirm a clot. It just means you definitely need that ultrasound imaging.
And other labs for VTE?
Mostly for monitoring treatment. We check APTT if the patient is on IV heparin, INR for warfarin, Coumadin, and always keep an eye on platelet counts, especially with heparin, because of the risk of HIT heparin-induced thrombocytopenia.
Let's talk worst-case scenarios. Complications. What are the absolute red flags we need to jump on immediately for PAD?
The biggest one is critical limb ischemia, CLI. This isn't just claudication anymore. This is the limb actively dying. Defined as chronic ischemic rest pain, lasting 2 weeks, non-healing arterial ulcers, or gangrene. It's a limb-threatening emergency. Needs urgent evaluation for revascularization bypass or angioplasty.
Immediate notification. Got it. For VTE, what's the most feared complication?
Without a doubt, pulmonary embolism, PE. A piece of that DVT breaks off, travels up through the heart, and slams into the lungs arteries. Can be fatal very quickly. chest pain, shortness of breath, tachycardia, classic signs.
Any other VTE complications?
Yes, post-thrombotic syndrome, PTS, is a common long-term one. The DVT damages the vein valves permanently, leads to chronic leg pain, swelling, heaviness, skin changes, even recurrent venous ulcers down the road. Really impacts quality of life.
And what about after an arterial intervention? Say a patient comes back from getting a stent or a bypass graft in their leg artery. What are we watching for?
This is crucial post-op nursing. We use the 6 P's assessment. Pain, sudden, severe, different from pre-op. Pallor, pale color. Pulselessness, loss of a previously present Doppler signal or pulse. Paresthesia, numbness, tingling. Paralysis, inability to move. And poikilothermia, coolness.
Any of those P's popping up suddenly?
Especially sudden severe pain, loss of pulse, or new pallor cyanosis. That signals acute occlusion of the graft or stent. Call the provider immediately. Time is tissue. Needs emergency intervention to save the limb. #TagV, nursing management and intervention priorities.
Okay, let's translate all this into action. What do we as nurses do? For PAD, the goal is getting blood to the tissues. So positioning.
Positioning has to help gravity. Encourage dependent positioning for pain relief. Let those legs hang down.
What should they absolutely avoid?
Avoid anything that kinks the hose. No crossing legs, no tight socks or clothing. And critically, avoid prolonged knee flexion, like sitting with knees bent sharply for hours, as that can compress the popliteal artery behind the knee. Encourage frequent position changes. Avoid prolonged sitting.
Makes sense. What about meds for PED?
Primarily focused on two things: preventing clots systemically and helping claudication symptoms. So standard is an antiplatelet agent, usually low-dose aspirin, sometimes clopidogrel, Plavix. This reduces the risk of heart attack and stroke associated with that systemic atherosclerosis.
And for the claudication itself?
Two main drugs we use. First, celostadogrel, pletalsal. This one's pretty effective.
How does celostazole work?
It does two things. It inhibits platelet aggregation, making blood less sticky, but its main benefit for claudication seems to be vasodilation. It helps relax the smooth muscle in the artery walls, opening them up a bit more, which can significantly improve blood flow and how far someone can walk before the pain starts.
Okay. And the other one, pentoxifilin.
Yeah, pentoxifilin, Trental. It works differently. It's more of a blood rheology agent. It makes red blood cells more flexible so they can kind of deform and squeeze through narrowed areas better. It also decreases blood viscosity, making it flow easier. Generally considered less effective than celostazole, but sometimes used.
Important point here. Are anticoagulants like warfarin or heparin used for PAD treatment itself?
Generally, no. Not for training the PAD blockages themselves. Antiplatelets are the standard. Anticoagulants would only be used if the patient also has another reason, like AFib or a separate VTE. Don't confuse the two.
Good clarification. What about non-drug approaches?
Exercise is huge. A structured, supervised walking program, like walking 30, 45 minutes, 3 times a week, pushing into mild claudication pain, resting, then starting again is often the most effective treatment for improving walking distance. It helps build collateral circulation, tiny new vessels bypass the blockages.
And the big one?
Smoking cessation. Non-negotiable. You have to hammer this home. It's the single most important modifiable risk factor. Quitting smoking can significantly slow disease progression.
And finally, foot care.
Meticulous daily foot care. Inspect feet every single day, including between the toes, using a mirror if needed. Look for any cuts, blisters, redness, sores. Wash, dry thoroughly, moisturize, but not between toes. Wear comfortable, well-fitting shoes. Never go barefoot. Avoid trauma, because they might not feel an injury and a small wound can become a disaster fast.
Okay, switching gears completely. PVD management, goal. Promote venous return back to the heart. So positioning.
Opposite of PA. Use gravity to help drain. Elevate the legs above the level of the heart whenever possible. Several times a day for 15, 30 minutes is great. When sleeping, maybe elevate the foot of the bed on blocks.
But they should still walk.
Yes, daily walking is important. It uses the calf muscle pump to help push blood upward. The key is to avoid prolonged static positions, either sitting or standing still for hours. Encourage movement, ankle pumps if sitting.
And the cornerstone of CVI management and ulcer healing.
Compression. Absolutely essential. Graduated compression stockings, multi-layer compression bandages, intermittent pneumatic compression, IPC devices. These all provide external pressure.
How does compression help?
It physically squeezes the tissues, reduces edema, supports the vein walls, helps the valves function better, and increases blood flow velocity in the veins, reducing stasis. It's critical for healing venous ulcers and preventing recurrence.
But you mentioned a huge safety check before starting compression.
Yes. the absolute most critical nursing check. You must assess for significant PAD before applying therapeutic compression, especially high compression levels.
Why is that so critical? What happens if you compress a leg with bad PAD?
If someone has severe arterial insufficiency, say an ABI less than 0.5, and you wrap them tightly with compression, you can literally cut off the already compromised arterial blood supply. You can cause acute limb ischemia, tissue death, gangrene, potentially leading to amputations, iatrogenic harm.
So check pulses, get an ABI first if there's any suspicion of PA.
Always. Assess arterial first, then compress venous if appropriate. That's a non-negotiable safety step.
Okay. What about managing an acute DVT?
Initial management might involve some bed rest, but usually it's followed by early ambulation as soon as the patient is therapeutically anticoagulated with heparin, Levonox, or starting warfarin DOACs. Ambulation helps prevent post-thrombotic syndrome. Close monitoring of anticoagulation labs, APTT, INR, platelets, is key. Educate heavily on bleeding precautions.
And wound care for those weepy venous ulcers.
Unlike dry arterial ulcers, venous ulcers often need moisture retentive dressings to manage the exudate and promote healing. Keep the surrounding skin clean and dry. And nutrition is vital.
How so?
Healing these big chronic wounds requires a lot of resources. Ensure the patient has adequate protein intake. Also important are vitamin C for collagen synthesis, vitamin A, and zinc. And if they're diabetic, getting blood sugar under tight control is paramount for any wound healing.
All right, let's put this all together. Two patient scenarios to really hammer home the differences. First up, Mr. Johnson.
Okay. Mr. Johnson is 68. Long history of heavy smoking, maybe 40 pack years. He comes in because of pain in his calf. He says it starts like clockwork, exactly 5 minutes into his daily walk, gets so bad he has to stop and lean on something.
Reproducible pain with exercise.
Exactly. And he says the pain goes away completely after just a minute or two of rest. But he also mentions something else, a burning, aching pain in his feet, mostly his toes, that wakes him up at night.
Rest pain.
Yes. And when asked how he relieves it, he says, oh, I just sit up on the edge of the bed for a while, let my feet hang down. Sometimes he falls asleep in his recliner. We check his ABI. It comes back 0.65 in the affected leg.
Okay, let's unpack Mr. Johnson. The ABI 0.90 confirms PD. The calf pain, textbook intermittent claudication. Reproducible, relieved by rest.
Perfect. And the nighttime foot pain. Relieved specifically by dangling the legs. That's classic ischemic rest pain.
Yeah.
His body is telling him gravity helps. Smoking history is the giant red flag risk factor.
So top nursing priorities for Mr. Johnson right now.
Number 1, 2, and 3, smoking cessation. Start that conversation immediately. Offer resources. Get him started on an antiplatelet, probably aspirin. Discuss Cilostazol for his claudication. Prescribe a supervised exercise program, that walking routine.
And education.
Huge focus on foot care. Daily inspection, proper shoes, avoid injury, and explicitly teach him not to elevate his legs for prolonged periods, especially not above heart level, as that will worsen his ischemic pain. Reinforce the benefit he feels from dangling.
Great. Clear PA picture. Now let's meet Mrs. Evans.
Mrs. Evans is 52. She has a job where she stands on her feet all day on a concrete floor. She mentions having a really tough twin pregnancy about 5 years ago with terrible leg swelling afterwards. She comes in today complaining of swelling in her right lower leg, and there's a large, kind of messy-looking wound just above her inner right ankle.
Medial malleolus-looking.
Exactly. The skin all around the wound is dark brown, feels thick and tough. She says her legs, especially the right one, feel incredibly heavy and tired by the end of her shift. The only thing that helps is putting her feet up on pillows when she gets home.
Okay, Miss Evans. History sounds suggestive. The complicated pregnancy could involve periods of immobility, stasis, and maybe hormonal changes, hypercoagulability, potentially leading to a past DVT. Standing job definitely contributes to dependency.
Right. That past event might have damaged her vein valves, endothelial damage, a stasis link, leading to the CVI she likely has now.
And the assessment findings. Unilateral edema points to venous, that brown, leathery skin. Classic hemosiderin staining from chronic venous hypertension. Irregular ulcer, medial ankle location, screams venous ulcer.
And the pain pattern seals it. Heavy, aching, worse after standing all day, dependency, relieved by elevation. Textbook PVD-CVI.
So nursing priorities for Mrs. Evans, completely different from Mr. Johnson.
Totally opposite. Priority one here is still safety. Assess arterial status first. Check her pedal pulses. Ideally, get a baseline ABI just to be absolutely sure there isn't significant underlying PAD before you slap on compression.
Assuming her ABI is okay, say 0.8.
Then compression therapy is the mainstay. High-level compression stockings or bandages. Education is key.
Yeah.
Elevate those legs whenever she can, especially after work. above heart level. Avoid prolonged standing without breaks or movement. Teach ankle pumps.
And the wound?
Wound care focused on managing exudate, likely needs absorbent, moisture-retentive dressings, and protecting the surrounding skin. Nutritional assessment, check protein, vitamin C, zinc intake. Reinforce the importance of wearing her compression consistently. Hashtag tag Vivin. High yield review and final clinical pearls.
Wow, putting them side by side like that makes the difference is so clear. Let's do a super quick rapid fire review, the ultimate cheat sheet.
Let's nail it down.
Okay. Pathophysiology, PAD is?
Arterial blockage, atherosclerosis, ischemia problem.
EVD is?
Venous return problem, stasis, valve failure, clots, congestion problem.
Pulses.
PA.
Diminished or absent. Use that Doppler.
PVD.
Usually present. Normal pulses.
Color temp. PD.
Cool limb. Pallor went up. Rubor went down. PVD. Warm limb. Brown, leathery skin, especially lower leg.
Pain pattern. PAD.
Intermittent claudication. Exercise pain. Rest relief. Or rest pain relieved by dangling down. PVD. Heavy aching pain. Worse with dependency. Relieved by elevating up.
Ulcers. PAD. Location look.
Toes, heels, pressure points. Lateral ankle maybe. Punched out, dry, pale necrotic base, painful. PVD location look, medial angle area, gator region, regular shape, shallow, lots of drainage, brown surrounding skin.
Arteries are down, veins are up, AARP away from heart, you vein visit, return to heart, simple mnemonics help. But let's end on that bigger picture you mentioned earlier. Why is recognizing PAD so critical beyond just the leg itself?
It comes back to that systemic nature. Yes, managing PVD, the venous ulcers, the edema, it's hugely important for function and quality of life. But identifying significant PAD, especially that critical limb ischemia, that's a 5-alarm fire for the whole cardiovascular system.
Because the leg arteries are just a window.
They're a window into the state of the coronary arteries, the carotid arteries, the whole system. Severe PAD tells you this patient is carrying a massive burden of atherosclerosis everywhere.
Which means their risk for
a major heart attack, a debilitating stroke, or even sudden cardiac death is dramatically elevated. So when you, the nurse, recognize that rest pain or see those ischemic changes or get that low ABI, you're not just thinking about saving the limb. You must be thinking about triggering a full cardiac risk assessment and aggressive systemic risk factor modification.
It's about mortality reduction, not just limb salvage.
Exactly. Your astute assessment of the leg might be the key intervention that prevents that patient's fatal MI next month. That elevates your role from focusing on the local problem to impacting long-term survival. Understanding that connection is what separates basic care from truly expert clinical practice.
A powerful reminder that it's all connected. Thanks so much for breaking this down so clearly today.
It was my pleasure. Hopefully it helps folks nail this down.
Absolutely. And thank you all for joining us on this deep dive. We hope this gives you the clarity and confidence you need, whether it's for exams or at the bedside. We'll catch you next time.